Good morning and welcome to Local Matters Health Matters, where we spotlight key health issues and community concerns across the Upper Cumberland. I'm Dr. Emily Lee.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Mabry. We're professors at the Whitson Hester School of Nursing at Tennessee Tech University.
Today, in recognition of Mental Health Awareness Month, we're turning our attention to the importance of mental health, especially in rural areas like the Upper Cumberland. Access to care, awareness of common conditions, and reducing stigma are all essential components to building a healthier, more supportive community. Joining us is Dr. Peggy Karlowski, a licensed psychologist who has been serving patients across the Upper Cumberland for many years. She's here to help us better understand the needs in our region, address common misconceptions, and explore the power of early intervention and ongoing care.
Dr. Karlowski, thank you for joining us today.
You're most welcome. I'm honored.
Can you start by sharing a bit just about yourself, about your background, and what inspired you to become a psychologist?
Well, even before I even knew what a psychologist was, I was just one of those inquisitive children that wondered about life and how things turn out and why people are so different. And even in middle school, I remember writing an English assignment about the recipe for a good life. And the teacher was so floored, she was reading it to the class. I have no clue what I wrote. I was in middle school.
I
was wondering about things like that very young.
Yeah.
And when I started college, I was going to be a writer. And I was a little disillusioned with my first journalism class because I wanted to write about deep issues. So when I took my first psychology courses, I was intrigued and just always wondered about human nature and what affects our life. And I was intrigued with that, and I've never stopped being intrigued. And I think the essence of life is largely about having some healthy mental health and relationships. And so I feel like I'm in the best career I can imagine.
Mm-hmm. And you're still curious.
I'm still curious.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening this morning to an intense talk on some of the newer findings about ADHD and things that we didn't even know back in the day.
No. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm still intrigued about what affects the quality of our life and what can affect the quality of our life more than our mental health.
Mm-hmm. And continuously changes.
Absolutely.
And the world around us
changes. And the more we know, it can empower us to have our best life.
Absolutely.
Yep. So you've been serving the Upper Cumberland for quite some time now.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us more about your practice and the types of services that you offer.
Okay. Well, I have been in private practice, full-time private practice for, 30-something years. And before that, I worked in a psych hospital for children. I worked in a mental health center. I was over therapeutic foster care. I did evaluations and corrections. But in my private practice, I see a gamut of just life situations. I do see a lot of clients that are dealing with just normal, ordinary challenges of life.
Mm-hmm.
I work a lot with people struggling with depression, with bipolar, with ADHD, with relationship issues, a lot of people with OCD and anxiety disorders. People that are reacting to life stressful events with some trauma. I do, in my practice, my limitations are that if they need a lot of backup and emergency situations, I'm limited because I'm kind of pretty much a one-man show.
Right.
I try to network and try to hook them in with their family physicians and psychiatric nurse practitioners and psychiatrists if medication is in order. But with that said, there are situations where people would be probably better served with less risk if there were other professionals in the practice with them.
Well, I think collaborative care
is what
healthcare is going towards.
Absolutely.
You know, we can't be silos anymore.
Absolutely.
And this person treats this and this person.
That's right.
I do think it's important for the community and
absolutely
that person to be in a collaborative relationship. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I spend a lot of my time being willing to take those times to call the doctor or call the,
yes,
you know, the practitioner and or whoever else to try to coordinate that care. Because
yeah.
I think that's part of just good practice.
I remember that from practicing internal medicine.
Yes.
You know, we would talk back and forth, and that was 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
You know, when you and I could collaborate together.
Absolutely.
So no, it's good that you know, now it's the thing, you know,
yes.
Back then it wasn't the thing to,
right.
to pick up the phone and call somebody
right.
and say, hey, you know, can you see this person? Or you call me back and say, this is what they've got.
Yes.
Can you
yes.
fix such and such, or, you know, prescribe such and such for this anxiety problem, or.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you've mentioned several mental health issues mm-hmm. that you treat. And that you feel more qualified to treat. Patient-wise, are you seeing only adults? Like, what are your ages? What is your practice like as far as, do you do inpatient? Do you do telehealth visits? What types of visits?
Well, I don't work with inpatient.
Okay.
I'm strictly at an outpatient facility, although I have had clients that did need to go in at times
yeah.
for inpatient health. But predominantly, it's outpatient. I started my career a lot, mostly with children, because I wasn't from a rich family. I had to work going to college. And
yeah,
so I worked
yeah.
in a psych hospital for children and did a lot of my early care with children. But I have, as I have grown, I see more adults. I don't even see as many teens as I did years ago. A lot of teens, to be quite honest, want to see someone younger. And so a lot of times they'll see my daughter, who's a therapist, or someone younger, although I do have a few here and there.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly work with young adults and above because I'm one of the very few providers who take Medicare around here. I do see a lot of older ones in my practice now, too.
Okay.
And so I do have an older population along with middle age and young adults.
Do you see veterans? I mean, I know they usually have different than Medicare. But.
I do, and I am with TRICARE and
okay.
Champus,
yeah,
so I'm
yeah,
able
yeah.
to bill for them. Unfortunately, as what we're seeing, we just don't have enough providers.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we appreciate you just taking the time out today to
sure.
come and talk
oh,
to
sure.
us.
Yeah.
And for the listeners, just to kind of clarify, inpatient and outpatient, I mean, you and I know what that means, and Dr. Lee does. But so when you tell you know, listeners, it's an outpatient only. That means that this is in a standalone place that
right.
you meet with them. You meet with them one-on-one.
Right.
Whereas inpatient is what we consider hospitalization or overnight stays.
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that
sure.
the listeners mm-hmm. understood.
Because,
I mean, we use the jargon a lot, but
yes.
a lot of people don't understand.
The other thing that so. I am doing, going along with outpatient,
mm-hmm.
I've really been interested the last – well, actually several years, but I've been doing it more the last couple of years. I do a lot of conferences related
yeah.
to mental health issues.
Okay.
And some people who may never go into a counseling situation, they may not even need ongoing counseling, but everyone needs to be equipped and inspired about their mental health. So I love doing conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And I know back in the day, mm-hmm. I was approached about teaching over at Tech. But I want to talk about what I want to talk about,
exactly,
to be quite
exactly.
honest.
No,
so
I
do
get
conferences that are related to what I feel passionate about
right.
and very trained in. And
yes.
so I offer those throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
And people can come in at a conference and spend maybe 3 to 6 hours and be very equipped and hopefully encouraged. And so I love doing that on the side.
Now, are those faith-based or are they just, are they secular
it's,
or are they,
it's all
is
the
it kind
above.
Of a mix?
Okay. It's all the above. What I'm saying is, yes, it's faith-based in that it's going to come from a faith-based criteria, but
mm-hmm.
we do a lot about on the brain,
yeah.
on research, what we know about the role of medications.
Yeah.
So I try
okay.
to make it comprehensive to equip. Because, I mean, we are body, soul, and spirit.
Absolutely.
And so I really try
Absolutely.
To make it be comprehensive.
Good. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
And who are these conferences mostly targeted towards?
Well, actually, they're just open.
Okay.
What I do, most of what I do is I post it in word of mouth, and I post about I give a description of what we're going to be covering. For example, one of them that I've had a lot of requests for is adult ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hoping to be doing that later on in the year. I do, I've done a pretty comprehensive one on anxiety and talk about it from a lot of different angles as far as your physiology and so forth. And what I do is I just post a description and then I have a website where they can go in.
Okay, that was,
they
yeah.
go in and they register.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, I'll do a freebie.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but the other thing I do is because I have to take off my practice, because I put a lot of prep in it.
Oh, absolutely.
They get online and they can register and pay online to attend. So
what is that website?
It is tlcconferences.com.
Perfect. Perfect. tlcconferences.com. Thank
you. I love doing that.
Yeah, yeah. No, we love teaching. Yeah.
Yes,
I totally understand. Yeah.
Yes. So we love professional community service to the community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, it sounds like you've had an extensive background.
I'm old. That's why.
Oh, I just said extensive.
Come on. It's in the mind.
There we go.
So you offer great services to the community. And it also sounds like from our conversation that you also, in private practice, accept lots of different types of insurance as well. So that's good to know for people who are seeking help that it's not necessarily you just have to pay out of pocket for it, that their insurance might cover some.
Right, right. And a lot of times people don't recognize that they have insurance coverage that will cover for mental health.
Mm, that's true.
For example, a lot of people who come in will qualify with a diagnosis that insurance pays that is not necessarily clinical depression, not necessarily anxiety, but it's reaction to some stressors that's recently happened in their life that they're having difficulty with. And a lot of times they don't realize. In fact, it has really been a blessing to me in my practice. I'm able to offer those services and insurance pick that up.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that they may have that.
That is awesome. How have you seen mental health care evolve then? You said you have extensive. Now, we're not going to talk about – I'll tell you what. We're going to pick that up at the next segment. I want you to think about how mental health has changed in your practice.
Absolutely.
All right. We're joined today by Dr. Peggy Karlosky on Local Matters, Health Matters, and we're discussing Mental Health Awareness Month. I'm Dr. Jennifer Mabry.
And I'm Dr. Emily Lee from Tennessee Tech's Whitson-Hester School of Nursing.
All right, Dr. Karlosky. Back on our first segment, we were talking about how things have changed. So briefly, can you know, since you started practicing, especially in a rural community like the Upper Cumberland, how has mental health care evolved?
Well, one of the ways it has evolved that I'm actually thrilled about is people are embracing counseling in record numbers, and that the problem is we don't have enough providers and so forth. But when I first opened my practice, I was warned, oh, you won't have enough, you know, you're not going to be able to make it, you know, and they wanted me to stay at the mental health center. What I found was short period of time, I had a waiting list.
Yeah.
But at the same time, most of the people who would come would be women. Very rarely for me to get a man. That is very much changed in my practice.
Oh,
I have
really?
A number of men that come in now. But the other situation that I found was that when the men would come, it would typically be professionals.
Yeah.
It'd be some of the doctors and lawyers, but they would be trying to hide so that nobody would see them come.
Right.
They were, and I understood that even if they were okay with it, they knew people here thought, what's wrong with him?
Right.
You know, and.
Or that's my primary care doctor.
That's right.
Why is he
Why
going
is
and he? Getting counseling?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And so they would be.
I could see that.
They would be.
That was a stigma.
And that's so different now. Mm-hmm. For about 13 years, I had a physician's group. They came once a week.
I remember that.
Yes.
I do remember that.
And I look at that. I'm so thrilled that people now see it as a healthy thing.
Yeah.
Whereas they used to be afraid of who's going to see me come out of the office. Mm. They sometimes sit out there and chat in my driveway. And I'm like, okay. I love the fact that that is evolving.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But like you said, we need more people going into this field that are interested in it, that have the passion for it.
Absolutely.
Because the need is
it's great.
High.
It's great.
I do think in primary care, you do see that now. Whereas, yes, we can treat the condition with the medication and we can try this and this, but they are very adamant that counseling is a very important piece
Absolutely.
Of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes, it actually is. And that's, I guess, a pet peeve of mine. I almost consider it, maybe this is harsh to say, but I almost consider it malpractice to put a person on a medication
Absolutely.
And not refer them to counseling.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That just really bothers me. That's happening less and less.
No, but I agree with that.
There for a long time, general practitioner would put them on a med and never refer them to counseling. And that should never be, I think.
Or just follow them up and, well, I'll see you in 3 months.
Right.
What?
Right.
What?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, no, I agree. Yeah. I do think that has changed a lot. What about since the pandemic? Telehealth?
Yes. When we knew that when the pandemic came, of course we went to now having telehealth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we actually even had some insurance companies like Medicare open up for even phone sessions for those who maybe were compromised and couldn't do telehealth. But now we offer telehealth as a standard of care.
Yeah.
And it's made it available for so many more that can't come in.
I think it's awesome. Yeah, the access to care. And then also even people, you know, we still have areas in the Upper Cumberland, in the 14 counties, that don't have Wi-Fi.
Right.
Don't have internet service. I mean, they only have a hardwired phone.
Yes.
So for the federal government at that level of insurance and coverage for people, I thought that was huge as well. For, as in, you know, a health policy across the board.
Yes. And it's also made it helpful for some professionals that are in busy practices themselves, that they can do telehealth with me when it would be real hard with their schedule to physically come in.
Yeah, I agree. It's great access. So May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So why is this observance important, do you think, particularly for communities like ours here in the Upper Cumberland?
Well, I just really believe that the more aware people are, I mean, everybody has mental health. Everybody's going to have challenges.
That's so true.
And I think, why are we not talking about it? Mm-hmm. Why are we not getting it out there and making people more aware that we all can benefit from some help in dealing with our own emotions and relationships and so forth? And so I'm just thrilled that we do take a designated time to really boost it up and talk to people about being aware of what's going on. And so, I mean, I think it's almost common sense. Why wouldn't we?
I mean, every single person is going to experience life in some form or fashion.
Yes.
So I agree 100%. So are there specific mental health challenges or trends that you feel like you're seeing more frequently in our region?
Well, definitely anxiety. We have seen some of the stats that it has been sobering, the increase in anxiety. There's been a lot of theorizing. Of course, we know that after the pandemic, it was a big surge, and actually in children, too.
Yes.
And we really have a need for more to work with children.
Yeah.
And I was having some of the local, you know, physicians say, we've got all these children, and we don't, that we're more anxious and now that the media is the way it is, they hear it all.
Yeah.
And then the school shootings and so forth. And so a big increase in anxiety. I've also had a lot of concerns with parents that were there, not for themselves, but because of their either children or adult children and some of what's going on with some of the challenges in our world today. And that has been – social media has been – We could have a whole segment on just social media and the effects on mental health.
Yeah.
I was just listening to a segment this morning about some of the types of the intense use of social media and brain changes.
Yes.
And it was amazing.
I have read about that, yes.
Of how it's related to, it almost
rewiring.
Looks like ADHD.
Yes, it's a rewiring.
And that there's so much distraction that they look almost like ADHD. And
they do,
from intense social media, and that it messes up your circadian rhythms at night. And just, I don't know. I mean, I guess these are trends of this time in our life and history. I don't think it's related to just here. I just think it's universal.
Everywhere.
I do. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
And those things are not going to change.
No.
So we have to learn how to address those.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, and I also think about that social isolation that kids and people had during the pandemic and now trying to get back into society and back into social relationships and, you know, being around people.
Yes.
It's it's a unique challenge.
It's
I
a
think.
Unique mm-hmm. challenge, and even with the texting and so forth, what mm-hmm. are we losing in mm-hmm.
looking
types
at someone
of communication
yep.
and
yep.
Yeah.
yeah
a relationship?
So how can we begin to overcome those kind of barriers? So, you know, you talked about social media and face to face conversations. How professionally, well, you know, how would you tell somebody to start overcoming that?
I think first off, they need the information.
Mm.
I do believe, you know, we can't just go in there and tell our children to get off social media at a certain time. Parents are doing it.
I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're constantly on their phone. Yeah. And so they are getting some rewiring and some issues mm-hmm. with it
yep.
themselves.
Yep.
So we have to, you know, just like we went on the quest to let people know that smoking was causing harm, you know, we're not going to stop it all, but at least we can give the information. I think one of the reasons I can still stay in my career and love it is I know main thing I can do is give it a safe place that people can be real and give them the information. I can't make them do it, but
right.
I can try to promote getting the information out there.
Yeah.
And so that to say, to help with your children, you need to know this mm-hmm. and you have to take some responsibility for your own self and your family.
Yeah. Education is power.
Thank you, Dr. Karlosky.
Welcome back to Local Matters, Health Matters. I'm Dr. Emily Lee.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Mabry. We're continuing our conversation with psychologist Dr. Peggy Karlosky, talking about the importance of mental health awareness, especially here in the Upper Cumberland. All right, Dr. Karlosky.
So let's do a little myth busting. This is Dr. Mabry's favorite part. Mm. So one common myth that we hear often is mental illness is a sign of weakness. Can you talk about why that's simply not true?
It's also very frustrating and causes such damage. I think it just frustrates me because we do not have the ability to look into somebody's brain and compare. We just can't. We can't see that we have different wiring. We've had different experiences that affected our brain. We don't know people's background
mm-hmm.
and what has contributed to why we act the way we do mm-hmm. or just a number of things. And it frustrates me because with lack of knowledge, we can do harm thinking it's a weakness when that person actually maybe wired so differently that it's understandable why they're struggling in a certain area more than another person.
Because you don't mm-hmm. know the whole story.
We don't know the
True.
Whole story.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't.
True. We talk about that at home a lot. You
yes.
never know what people are
you
going
never
through.
Know.
You don't know what their background is.
And I have had a number of times, because, you know, confidentiality is huge in
yeah.
counseling.
Yeah.
But I have had people say, oh, you know, so-and-so, and they've got da-da-da, and they've just been advantaged. And I think, yeah, I've had them in my office. You have no clue what's going on in their life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'm not so naive. I think everybody sitting in here has got stuff
mm-hmm.
right
mm-hmm.
now.
Absolutely. And a background and
absolutely.
And
yes.
Anxieties.
Yes.
And yeah.
And now we know, now that we have brain studies and functional brain scans and SPECT scans that they didn't have whenever I was in grad school, now we recognize even the effects of trauma on the brain.
Absolutely.
And what it does to the
mm-hmm.
brain, just like drug use and what it does. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know,
addiction.
I just recognize yeah. the more people understand, maybe we will look at that differently.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's what May is about.
Absolutely.
This mental health awareness.
Yes.
Yeah, make everybody aware.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's another myth that we hear a lot. Therapy or counseling is only for people with severe issues. What would you say about that?
Oh, my.
Just for the listeners, Dr. Karlosky literally just rolled her eyes. So.
Sorry about that, guys.
No, that's perfect, perfect.
Number one, let's define severe.
Ooh, perfect.
I mean,
yeah,
I look
that
at
good.
That and I'm thinking,
what does that mean?
My issue mm-hmm. may be different. And I've had people say, well, you know, I shouldn't probably be here. You probably have people that have a lot harder situation than me. Come yeah. on. We've all got stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally believe, I'm prejudiced, I believe everybody can benefit from counseling. I believe when you get in a safe place that's private and it's about dealing with your stuff, you can have a more effective life. And we all have challenges in life because life is challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And so
and interpersonal relationships, you know, with other people. If your mental health is affected, mild, like you said, what is mild? What is moderate? What is severe? You know,
true.
How do you gauge that? And then those relationships you have with other people.
And that's one of the things that I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but I'm probably known to keep people longer in therapy than what insurance likes you to keep them, because I really believe.
Once you're an expert.
I believe that mm-hmm. we need sometimes ongoing care. I have had some people that had severe, if you want to call it severe, mental health challenges, conditions that aren't just going away, that I've had for years.
Yeah.
And that periodically we need some support and, mm-hmm. And so forth. But I really believe that mental health is an ongoing all through the rest of our life. You may not stay in counseling all that time, but at the same time, you need always to be monitoring, when do I need a checkup? When do I need mm-hmm. to go and see how I'm dealing with some situations in my life?
And you feel like that's everybody needs that at some point in their
Absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely,
yeah.
I do.
Yeah. That's not a one and done.
Right.
That's kind of how we say
right.
it. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a good professional help as well. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people turn to friends or family mm-hmm. members who
yes.
are not able to offer the best advice or coping strategies.
Yes.
Or they're too close to that person.
Yeah.
You know,
they may be too close
yeah.
or they may give really poor advice. They may give
misinformation.
They
yes.
may give misinformation mm-hmm. where they don't want you to get on that medication
mm.
that might be so needed with your brain.
And that is the next myth.
Or they might make you mm-hmm. want to stay in a relationship that's toxic that you need to have boundaries or maybe even have to get out of mm-hmm. for your own safety. There's just so many ways that we have to be careful who speaks into our life.
Yep. I agree with that. I've thought that for many years. Mm-hmm. Who do you have speaking into your life?
Right.
Who do you have in your private circle?
Right.
Who do you have as a safe space?
Right.
And I like how you keep going back to that, is you provide that safe space. You know, you're not biased. You don't know them. You want them to open up. Tell them really how they're feeling. And then I know you have specific questions that you can ask that will help them dive deeper into those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about medication.
Well,
what's you know, the stigma behind that? We kind of briefly, you mentioned it, you know, grandma doesn't want me to take this medicine, or
right.
my mom, you
right.
know.
And it's because I think this is, again, another, I can roll my eyes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that is, we want to give opinion about situations that we have no clue about. I would never try to advise somebody about their
cholesterol.
You know, yes.
Or
thank you. Tell them about you know,
no, you know
some other
new.
Physical thing that I have no
right,
clue about.
Right.
Some maybe in
heart
cardiac.
Failure.
Yes,
thank you.
And yet we will
right.
when the brain's involved.
Right.
And I don't
that
understand
is so
that, but we
yeah.
do that. And at the same time, I think it's lack of insight and information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once you understand more, and I will admit, the brain's the last frontier. We don't know it all,
mm-mm.
but I think we are researching and we've gained a lot of information and help. And in that part, I do believe I try to spend time doing a little bit of education. No, I'm not the medical doctor,
right.
but I've been at this a long time,
right.
and I can, unfortunately, have to be the one explain things that really their doctor should have talked with them about.
Absolutely.
And I've
yeah.
had that many times mm-hmm. that they didn't want to take the meds or they wouldn't stay on it because somebody did not take the time to give at least some simplistic explanation of what this is doing in your brain and
mm-hmm.
why.
Yeah.
I try to do that.
And the time that it takes for those
yes.
medications. It's not a one.
Yes.
It's not you take it for a couple of days and I'm going to feel better.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, people don't understand that those brain chemicals.
Absolutely.
It takes time
yes.
for them to build up, and you don't want them to change fast.
That's right.
You know, that's what I would tell patients
that's right.
is you want this to be a slow process. You don't want to all of a sudden tomorrow have 1,000
right.
percent more energy. You need it to be a slow process.
But that's
mm-hmm.
another area that I feel strongly about,
yeah.
that if whoever is prescribing the medication,
because
a
too.
Lot of times it's not mm-hmm. the psychiatrist. A lot of times it's their general practitioner
yes.
or a nurse practitioner.
Yes.
I think they need
their
to
provider.
Take the
yeah.
time to explain a little bit to induce them having the comfort and willingness
mm-hmm.
to really be faithful with their medication trials.
And that's a trust issue, too.
Yes.
You know, if I – and I talk about that with patients, and I know Dr. Lee does as well. Even students, we teach them, you know, you have to build that trust up with
right.
them as a and on a one-to-one basis before that person's going to really – trust what you say about medication or counseling or boundaries.
Yes.
You know, that's the other myth that I think we'll get into the next segment. But what about children and teens? You know, we talked about stigma with medications. You know, what I see now is a trend because Dr. Lee and I go help with the Head Start, so preschool mm-hmm. kids. Mm-hmm. And they have seen a threefold, fourfold increase in social issues with those kids, not even before they get to school. So preschool kids, age 3 to 5, behavior issues. So what are the myths that you see, you know, people, I hear a lot of the parents say, oh, you know, that's just him being a boy, or, oh, she's just not speaking yet because she's very shy. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. speech is not, or they only respond to a screen.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of experience, you know, with that, those kind of mental health issues, can you understand, help us understand the truth behind that?
Well,
go ahead.
Sorry. Well, I was just going to say, I really believe sometimes the people who notice first will be the doctor.
Yeah.
Or a teacher.
Teachers, absolutely.
Or they'll pick up things, mm-hmm. whether it's in mm-hmm. Their preschool.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And they'll notice something's off a little bit.
Right.
And that's where it may be on the spectrum.
Right.
It may be some attention deficit mm-hmm. symptoms. It may be some OCD type symptoms, which you'll see a lot of symptomology of OCD in childhood that may not end up being a full-blown OCD.
Right.
But you'll see things that maybe somebody else alerts to it. And again, people will, because all of these are on a continuum. We all
yeah.
have some
absolutely.
Of the behaviors.
Yes.
But when it's noticeable enough, I think parents sometimes don't want to see it, or mm-hmm. just because you're protective of your child, you don't want it, but at the same time may not recognize they miss some real opportunity when they don't address that. And I know, for example, I knew a good friend of mine that I had to be careful speaking into the situation, but I've suspected autism almost in infancy, as crazy as that sounds.
Wow.
Okay. I just noticed differences even in infancy. And she didn't want to see that, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But I remember at some point I pleaded with her to get some eval, to do some things, and would not. And what I was explaining was that the neuroplasticity of the brain, if she addressed it early.
Yep.
It was amazing
mm-hmm.
what they were doing with autism in those early 2 and 3 years old,
yep.
and that some of them, by the time they got to kindergarten, there was some noticeable changes. But at the same time, I just want mostly to people be enlightened to check it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if somebody does speak that in a concerned, loving way,
right.
which it sounds
right.
like this person
right.
was your friend,
right.
To maybe kind of step back and think about that.
Right.
I think that's great. Thank you again, Dr. Peggy Karlosky, for joining us today and sharing your valuable insights into mental health care and awareness in the Upper Cumberland. As we observe Mental Health Awareness Month, we encourage our listeners to take time for their own mental wellness, to support others, and to break the stigma around mental health care.